No matter how young and healthy you are, life can be full of unpleasant surprises. And without health insurance, even a short hospital stay could set you back thousands of dollars. If you qualify for expanded Medicaid, you can get coverage through Passport Health Plan. Find out if you qualify. Call 855-459-6328 or go online at kynect.ky.gov. Choose Passport, the plan that takes the time to care.
Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder, molesting, running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So, here's Rick.
And this is Rick Redding, and welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show. This is our 24th show. A reminder, this is the show that features every week some of the most interesting people in the Ville. And this week is no exception, of course. I have David Jones Jr., who is on the Jefferson County School Board, a business leader in this town, a very interesting man, as well as Smith Haney, who is the son of the famous editorial cartoonist at the Courier-Journal, Hugh Haney. And he's on to talk about an exhibit going on downtown. Smith is a circuit court judge. And very exciting week. The show is starting to come together very easily. You know, since I've come up with this most interesting people in the Ville theme, I think the quality of our guest and quality of the content is all moving up, and it's all going great. I do want to mention our sponsor, Passport Health Plan. This is the second week we've been able to feature Passport on the show, and I believe it's next week we're going to talk to President and CEO of Passport, Mark Carter, a longtime friend of mine who's really got an interest, key interest in the media and some of the stuff that I do. My first guest is David Jones Jr. And David spoke, if you're not familiar, I, along with a couple of other folks, host a breakfast every 2 months called the Breakfast of Champions. It's held at the University Club. We also have a nice speaker. This was our sixth and final breakfast of the year. Breakfast of Champions Louisville has a Facebook page if you're interested in finding out who our speakers are and coming out and join us. It's a great group of movers and shakers. We get up at 7:30 on Monday mornings to speak. And so we were pleased to get David Jones Jr. to come talk to us and really had no idea he was going to speak. So I guess candidly about what's going on over there at JCPS. He was elected last November. He's been on the board 10 months and has some keen observations, as you'll hear. You know, the school board has a lot on its plate. It's a $1.2 billion business. There's nothing bigger or more important in this town. And that's part of what David talks about is that it's so big that the eight school board members, or six, I'm not sure, but I think it's eight school board members. They have a lot on their plate and they deal with a lot of minutiae that, rather than tackling the big pictures, the big things that are going on in JCPS, what gets in the news and what you hear about a lot is the student assignment plan. And my ears perked up in David's talk at the breakfast. He talked about how there's no transparency in that process. If you, for example, for me, I have three boys. Two of them got into Manual High School without any problem. Manual's, the target school for a lot of high achieving people. And my third son, did the same thing, had the same grades, did all the same thing, but he didn't get in. And there was no explanation. There was no transparency in terms of the selection process. I just don't think it should be that way. David addressed that among many other items in our interview. So I'm just going to turn that over to him. And here it is.
What is Louisville if it's not a food town? Learn where to go and what to eat on Deliciously Louisville with Ashley Eats every other Wednesday on Louisville.au.
All right, I'm here at the University Club with David Jones, Jr. On the Rusty Satellite Show. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Just heard a wonderful talk about the JCPS Board of Education, et cetera. But first, I want to ask you about your great hobby or what you do for fun and how you stay so thin. you like to ride your bike in the mornings, right?
I love to ride my bike in the morning, I'm fortunate that I have a great group of friends who I ride with, and I'm also fortunate that, I've started to like biking at the time that the technology of lighting has, become so strong. But we ride about 5:30 in the morning several days a week. We usually go 30 or 40 miles each time, and I've never had a wasted day if I started it with a good bike ride.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's great. I guess I get my thrills out of dodging the traffic in the middle of the day. So
there's a whole lot less traffic in the early morning. That's really an important piece.
Well, you spoke to us this morning about your experience at 10 months in as the Jefferson County Public School Board, and tell me a little bit about what you've learned in that time.
Well, there are a couple of things that have kind of confirmed what I thought, and then there are a couple of new learnings. I thought we had a good superintendent in Dr. Donna Harkins, and that has been confirmed. I really like working with her. She's a strong leader, and I think just the person we need at this time. Second, I had a sense that there was a lot of pressure on JCPS from the state, and having gotten on the board just before Dr. Holliday, the state commissioner of education, accused Louisville and JCPS of academic genocide. I've learned more about exactly how strong that pressure is and, the urgency for improvement that we're under. There are a couple of new things I've learned, one of them very positive, one of them negative. I think the positive thing is the information environment at JCPS is way better than I imagined. I'm kind of a data geek.
Yeah.
And, they've invested very heavily over the years in what has sometimes, I think, seemed like the black hole of building enterprise data warehouses and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
But there's a lot of information. If you ask questions, they're way more often than I ever would have expected. There is actually information that can be pulled together to answer the questions. That's a very powerful thing for going forward in education as it is in medicine as we learn more about what's going on.
Sure.
The negative that I've learned more about is I think the culture in JCPS is a real challenge. I'm not sure quite how to describe it. As a business guy, I thought it would probably be a culture of laziness. Everyone has tenure. That's not it at all. Not at all. There are lots of hardworking people in the system. But I do think it's kind of a culture of fear. People are afraid to, step out of line, afraid to say what they really think. And I think that's probably because, unlike in certainly your world, journalism, where people know they're not going to have their career at one place, that's for sure. In the school system, people tend to work there the whole
time. Yeah, they want to keep their job, so they don't rock the boat.
I think it's they know they're going to keep their job. They can't be fired for the most part. But they also know that whatever colleagues they're with today are likely to be their colleagues 20 or 30 years down the line.
Sure.
And that's only a theory. I don't know. But the culture changing and, improving a place where the culture is one of fear is a big challenge. And, I hope that Dr. Harkins will be successful in creating a culture of confidence in the ability to improve. Last bit, we just got state test results, and for the first time in my memory, JCPS did hit its numerical targets for improvement. So there is evidence that things are starting to turn in the right direction, and some of the changes in that data are really quite striking. I mean, the improvement in the percentage of kids who graduate ready for college or career has gone from, below one-third just a couple of years ago to now slightly over half, which is nowhere near where it needs to get, but a big step.
And I think a lot of people in the general public, one of the statistics you presented today that it wasn't shocking to me today because I'd heard it before, but the fact that only 30% or more of students who enter JCPS. Don't ever finish. I mean there's a lot more people, I think, that can't even get a high school degree than I think what the general public expects. And it's just sort of eye-opening. I don't know if that's something for you to
address. JCPS is about typical of big urban districts nationally. Better than a lot, not as good as a few others. But, you know, the most recent data show that about 25% of ninth graders, kids who begin ninth grade, do not get a high school diploma. So it's a little bit better than it was, but that is still a shockingly large number. And in this day and age, I mean, if you don't have a high school diploma, boy, your prospects are dim.
You really wonder what happens to those people that don't make it. You know, I don't know where they end up.
Well, the data is pretty clear, and I mean, one of the reasons I ran for the board, probably the principal one, is not succeeding at that level in education correlates very highly with poor health. With obesity, with all of the chronic illnesses, and with the very high Medicaid expenses that are out of control in Kentucky,
right,
correlates with far greater likelihood of incarceration. I mean, if you look at the prisons, they're filled with
kids. Well, I was going to say they end up in jail.
Yeah, right. Or and on public assistance, and all of that leads to tax rate. So there's a huge question about how much we should be taxing ourselves to spend on education. But there's also a very good argument that if you don't educate people when they're young, those costs will come out in the back end at a very high level.
And right.
Boy, that's happening here.
So anything, and I've got a couple more questions for you, but you're on the board 10 months. Are there anything, you talk about how the board is bogged down with all these minutia and approving field trips instead of addressing major questions.
Right.
Have you figured out a way to cut through that or make any changes?
Well, I'm advocating that the board focus its attention first on the big things that affect student achievement. And, some of those big things are, how are we going to finance the schools in an era of, just unwillingness to continually raise taxes and prior commitments related to pensions and retiree benefits and Medicaid, those kinds of things eating up the state budget and cutting into education funding. We've got to figure out how to have a financial strategy that will get dollars into the classroom, even in an environment where more dollars are not continually coming in the door. We've got to figure out how to improve the quality of the teacher workforce and retain teachers better, because nothing has more impact on educational success than a great teacher in the classroom. And, the new generation, I talked a little bit about today's college graduates, are very different in their outlook than those 10 or 20 years ago. And, we need to modernize our human resources. So, fundamentally, I'd like the board to get in control of an agenda that's focused on the big rocks that relate to student achievement, instead of doing what it does now, which we really have a reactive agenda that is driven by a whole bunch of state mandates where you have to do this and you have to do that. And we still got to do them, but in big organizations, the way those are done is they're delegated, and then they're audited to make sure that they're done appropriately. The board members don't have time for some of the things that we're told we have to do right now, so we have to rely on management to do them.
Yeah, I was shocked to hear about 5-hour meetings twice a month is what your responsibility is.
Yeah, the board meets for 5 hours twice a month.
500 pages of data per meeting.
500 to 800 pages of background materials that we're supposed to review before each meeting.
Yeah.
And it's, you just hear me describe that, and it's fantasy land to think that all that stuff gets reviewed in detail and that's a true expression of democratic control.
It seems like there should be some level of importance before it becomes for the board.
Well, in smaller counties, those rules are perfectly appropriate.
I mean,
in places where there are only one or two schools and where a $5,000 contract is a meaningful contract size. But Jefferson County Public Schools, our budget is $1.2 billion.
Yeah.
That's a lot of $5,000 contracts.
That really is. Okay, now let me ask you about the thing with the student assignment plan. It's sort of the biggest thing in the news related to JCPS. And you mentioned in your speech about a goal to have more transparency in the way that student assignment plan is, you know, how parents find out how their child gets assigned to a school. My experience is I've had three sons, two of them, when it was time to apply for high school, got into Manual. The other one is just as smart, did just the same thing, didn't get in. There is no transparency. You get a letter that says you either got in or you didn't. Is there any way to change that?
Well, I think a lot of that is, I would look at some of that through the lens of customer service, mm-hmm. and some of it through the lens of, sort of communication. And then some of it, of course, is about the kind of the fundamental, how does the student assignment plan work? But, we have a big challenge. We have a lot of choice within the system. I think a lot of older voters, who remember the 70s and 80s when you got a letter in the mail saying your name begins with this letter, right. Now you're going to that school, they don't appreciate the way, parents look for school and apply to schools and all the different choice and options that they are. But it's very, very confusing. A high percentage of parents don't even complete the application within the deadline. There are many reasons for that, but a lot of it is it's just confusing. And I liken it to a lot of the forms that health insurance companies send you. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are confusing, and the reason that people don't fill them in or answer them right is because they're poorly done. The transparency issue in assignment, there are schools, Manual's an example, the traditional schools are other examples, where there are way more applications than there are seats. And the issue there is making clear to the public what the criteria for decision are. If it is if the criteria are we're going to decide the best kids academically, fine. Just say what they are so people can know. If it's we're going to have a well-balanced student body that wins, in football and has the highest academic scores, fine. Say what they are. We can argue about what they should be. But right now, I think your experience is very common. There's kind of a black box, and you don't know whether the process was fair what you're supposed to take away.
Right.
From
you'd like to know who's making that decision and how they make the decision.
Right. But I think those kinds of things, I think there's a lot of progress that can be made to help people understand better what's going on to create better customer service, as I call it. We're never going to, as long as we have some schools that are really good and some that are way less good, we're going to have this problem of scarcity. And the long-term answer is to have a whole lot more schools that people want to choose.
All right. Well, that's a great idea. And we're out of time here, David. Okay. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes after the Breakfast Championship.
Rick, thank you. I really enjoyed it. And thanks for the interview.
All right.
Take
care.
Again.
No matter how young and healthy you are, life can be full of unpleasant surprises. And without health insurance, even a short hospital stay could set you back thousands of dollars. If you qualify for expanded Medicaid, you can get coverage through Passport Health Plan. Find out if you qualify. Call 855-459-6328 or go online at kynect.ky.gov. Choose Passport, the plan that takes the time to care.
All right, and thank you very much, David Jones Jr., for appearing on the Rusty Satellite Show. David, very smart man. He was actually the back in 1998. I did an interview. It was the last interview I did as a reporter at Business First with him, and kind of fun to look that up, reminisce a little bit. I also wanted to mention, one of the things David told me off while the tape wasn't running was about how that decision on getting into Manual. A lot of kids, I guess, upper level East End kids. It's like a 20-something. He said it's a $22,000 decision on whether they get in or not. Because some parents will send their kid to Manual, but if he doesn't get in to Manual, they'll pay the tuition and go to Country Day or another private school. So anyway, there's a lot of issues involving the JCPS. I'm sure we're going to address it in the future with other people here on the Rusty Satellite Show. And anyway, that was a great event. And right now, I'd like to talk a little bit about something really cool. If you're hearing this on Thursday, you might want to go to tonight's University of Louisville women's basketball game. And if you can imagine this, it's really crazy. The basketball coach, Jeff Walls, you're hearing this right, he's offering to buy the first beer for the first 2,500 fans that show up at the game. This is a college basketball game. A college basketball coach, as an incentive to get people to show up at the game, he's offering to buy beer. I might take him up on it. I tell you, it's a really great really great promotion. I don't think there's not many other places in the country that this could happen except at the University of Louisville, where, you know, the basketball program for the men is the richest in the country, and Walls does a really good job at promoting his kids. He's got a great team. I actually love watching Shoni Schimmel play. She's the star guard for the University of Louisville. She's going to get a lot of attention this year. And the Lady Cards are a highly ranked team. It's very entertaining if you look for an opportunity to go out the Yum Center and don't want to deal with the big crowd for the men's games. Women's games are a good bet for you. It's a lot of fun. So go get your free beer from Coach Walls if you want to tonight, Thursday night. They're playing 14th ranked LSU. And this is, of course, a big week for sports in Louisville. I've been going out to the Cardinal games at the Yum Center this week. I saw them play Hofstra last night. is amazing. I'm not going to tell you anything if you're a sports fan you don't already know. Shane Bohannon, who was rumored to be either off the team or at least suspended through Christmas. Well, he played last night on November the 11th in the game at the Yum Center. So, you know, a lot of people are going to question Rick Pitino's decisions on what he says and what he does. You know, the bottom line is, you know, he's helping the young man become a better basketball player. And for all those people that, you know, question his decisions, well, the big debate in basketball, of course, is whether the approach that Pitino and the University of Louisville has is more effective or a better approach than the one that John Calipari and the University of Kentucky has. The Wildcats this week, of course, lost their first game of the year to Michigan State. They were the number one ranked. Kentucky was the number one ranked team in the country. Michigan State was two, and very close game, but Michigan State won up in Chicago. And so certainly there's a lot of buzz on the sports lines and sports talk radio about what's going on there and whether, you know, this highly heralded Kentucky team. I call them the Kentucky High School All-Star team, not the Kentucky Wildcats, because it's really a bunch of high school All-Stars trying to play together, and they are going to be good. And by the end of the year, I think they'll be really good. There was talk of them going 40-0. That's really not going to happen. It's not going to happen at all. They've lost a game now, and it never was. But anyway, December 28th, that's the big day. UofL, UK, play each other. So we'll stay tuned for that. This week, there's also a football game. The Cardinals, host Houston at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium, a must win, of course. UofL will be a 16-point favorite, I think, is the last I heard. And I'll be out there at that one, hoping the weather cooperates. Also like to mention, this is a big week for another former Rusty Satellite guest, Steve Fader, who runs the Catholic Sports Network. Their Hall of Fame event is going on, taking place Thursday night at the Kentucky Center for the Arts. The big deal is they're going to they've created a Howard and Schnellenberger Family Award, and they're going to honor the legendary Brahm family of Louisville. And I'll be out there for that. That looks to be a quite an event. I went last year, and Schnellenberger was there. And, you know, the Catholic sports in this town are really important, and there's really a lot of folks that care a lot about what goes on there. And this Hall of Fame induction is a big event. So speaking of big events, last Friday night was really a big night in Louisville on Main Street. I wrote a piece at LouisvilleKY.com. You can read about two events that were going on simultaneously at the Fraser Museum. They were dedicating or opening the Hugh Haney exhibit, a tribute to the editorial cartoonist who left the Courier in the late 90s, passed away in 1999, and, you know, the people there were Jerry Abramson, Dave Armstrong, John Yarmuth, all giving tribute to the work of this great editorial cartoonist who, you know, one of the questions I asked Smith Haney in our interview, you know, what would he be doing today? Because in today's modern world, you know, he was a man of a time and a place and was just perfect for that. And I'm going to write a piece for Insider Louisville just about the Haney exhibit, but it was really a good time going up and walking around the exhibit and having Smith Haney point out some things. One of the things about Smith, though, you know, he's a circuit court judge, and he says he started out following in his father's footsteps. He was the cartoonist at the Louisville Times, and of course the Louisville Times folded, and that motivated Smith to go to law school, for which he eventually became judge. And you know, it's just interesting for me to think the way the media has changed. It affects so many things, and one of them was Smith Haney's career. Who knows if times hadn't changed, if he'd have gone on to become an editorial cartoonist for a career. But anyway, I got to hear a lot of stories with Smith, besides the ones you hear here on the show, and just walking around and remembering the 70s and all the issues that were important then. You know, and the thing is, I guess the thing about it is that Haney was in a powerful position at a time when we all shared the same media. You know, there were three TV stations, there was one newspaper, and everybody talked about what was in the newspaper. And of course, that's all changed, and a lot of it's for the better. There's a lot more choices for us and all that. I won't debate that here, but it was really interesting reminiscing, I guess, about those days. I remembered when I was a teenager and delivered newspapers every morning, and I would get up to the stop and get my bundles of papers that were delivered by a truck. And before I'd start delivering them, I'd open up the sports page first, see what Billy Reed was writing about, usually about the UofL-UK rivalry and all that. That was big news, because that was where you got that information. There was no internet. And then I would turn to the opinion page and see the Haney cartoon. He did more than 10,000 in his career, they estimated. And Haney, the reason those 10,000 aren't all in one place, you know, he had a habit of giving them away to people that were subjects of them. And part of the exhibit up there at the Fraser Museum is that three of the politicians, McConnell and Armstrong and Abramson, have loaned this exhibit to the Fraser Museum for the term of this thing. It's going to go till January 26th. I do urge you to get up there and see this if you have any interest in newspapers and history. It's really a fascinating thing. But I'm going to turn over now to Smith Haney and listen to our interview. It took place at the Fraser Museum, and some of the things he points out, of course, it's on radio, you can't see. But anyway, we try to describe things as well as we could.
Learn about the movers and shakers in the Louisville business scene with Startup, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. A new episode every Tuesday at louisville.am.
And I'm here today at the Fraser History Museum with Smith Haney, and we are standing in a wonderful hall where I believe it's 107 of Hugh Haney's editorial cartoons are hanging, right? Welcome to the show, Smith Haney.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is the same as my dad's. It's Hugh Smith Haney, and then, you know, I just go by Smith because he went by Hugh.
Right.
What you're seeing here is roughly 100 of my 150-piece private collection. What happened was when Dad retired, the bulk of the existing collections, all the physical cartoons, went to the College of William & Mary. Now,
and there were only over 10,000 in his lifetime, is that right?
Yes, but Dad gave so many of them away. I mean, that was part of what he loved about drawing, was giving them away. I mean, he loved to give people presents and whatnot, but he gave these cartoons away right and left. But the ones that were left after Courier, they were stored actually across the street in an old bank building, and they were getting ready to ship them off to William & Mary. And in the months preceding, leading up to their being shipped to William & Mary, they had been cataloged on microfilm and numbered. And so it took months and months and months to go through. But my father and I worked out a deal, because I have always believed that there should be a museum collection for the people of Louisville, and that's right. What this is. And this is the first time, there's been a prior show of my collection, but there's never been a show here in Louisville. And this is the first time, essentially, that the collection has been put to the use for which it was intended, and that is for the people of Louisville. It's 150 cartoons. They were selected out. My father and I, we we wrestled over quite a few. As a matter of fact, those two hanging right next to each other, those two right there in the Martin Luther King cartoon were very controversial. We argued over those right and left. But my father's, he only had one condition, that I not loot the collection. And he was very suspicious of the whole endeavor, I must say. And when you look around here, I think you can tell, A, Dad was a pretty smart guy, and B, his suspicions were completely justified. Because this really is the best of the best.
And it's I've walked around, and it's very impressive just to walk around. But I can imagine if this is 100 and there's 10,000 of them and that he created in his lifetime, it must be really special. Now, he retired in 95 and passed away a few years later.
99.
But you were telling me that you actually began your career following your father's footsteps.
So. Yeah, I went to William & Mary as well. My degree's in fine arts. I was an artist my whole life. And to pay the rent, I was drawing political cartoons for the Times. The Times went under, and I was faced with that, you know, conundrum. Do I, move and try to find another paper? At that point in time, the writing was kind of on the wall in terms of, I'm afraid editorial cartooning was, as we can see now, was clearly dying off. And so I made a decision, like so many other people, and I went to law school, kind of like the last refuge of,
Well, I think there's probably a lot of former journalists out there who wish they'd have gone to law school. So it wasn't a very bad move, and you're now a circuit court judge. So
And there's actually a symmetry to it, because my father was named after his uncle, Judge Hugh Smith, and my father always wanted me to be a judge, And so it worked out well.
So it worked out good. Well, I came to the reception Friday night here, and boy, it was really evident there how many lives that Hugh Haney touched with Abrams. I understand there's a few special cartoons here that were donated, not in your collection, but were donated by politicians, right?
I mean, just loaned.
I don't want to say donated, right? They're on loan. Mm-hmm. So that's really great. But today's media, and I'm sure you follow what's going on in today's media, what would your dad have done today if he was coming up? And
well, I rather suspect, who knows, he'd be some sort of graphic illustrator of some sort. But one thing I think we can be pretty assured of is he would not have near the impact. There's no way that he would have the impact that he did at the time. 6 days a week, limited media. I mean, we only had three TV stations and the newspaper. And now, we've got the internet, we've got all that. And, just a whole generation of people. I mean, he was syndicated by the LA Times Syndicate. He was at the height of his career, between 80 and 100 newspapers in, like, mm-hmm. Time and Newsweek and things like that. So, I mean, when you think Van Gogh sold three paintings in his entire life, deferred gratification never held any allure for my father, that's for sure. I mean, he got about as much recognition during his lifetime as I think that an artist could ever dream of, and also, I mean, he got to meet a lot of interesting people, and he just had a storybook career. I mean,
he had some unusual things that I guess people now that didn't grow up reading him in the Courier Journal don't know about. I mean, maybe you could talk about it. I know he had the whole craze about finding Lois in every cartoon.
I shouldn't probably tell this, but just like any other artist, he borrowed things from time to time. He borrowed the idea of hiding a mom's name in there. Some other cartoonist had hidden something or other, but it just caught on. And, he'd usually put like two to three Loises per cartoon, and, it became the big game to find them. The interesting story was we were actually in Virginia during the moon landing, mm-hmm. and he was drawing in a hotel room. A lot of times he would have to, if we were away or he wanted to go away, he'd have to draw there and send it back, and it was a hassle. But he got so excited he forgot to put a Lois in the moon landing cartoon, and the cartoon was like the moon with the big footprint, had no caption, but it also had no Lois, and they got deluged. They got bags and bags and bags and bags of mail, like, where's Lois? It's like, oops, there ain't one.
Yeah, very, very interesting. You can't imagine that kind of impact. But and I talk about one other subject. I know his he was really tough on some politicians, and in particular, his main foil, I guess, was Richard Nixon.
Right? Sure, absolutely. And he ended up on the White House enemies list, obviously. And so, you know, Richard Nixon wasn't overly fond of him either. I mean,
now all these cartoons. I was just curious. I was asking somebody else here, and maybe you don't, but I'm not aware of. I mean, it seems like all this stuff should be in a book. Is there any plans for anything else?
There are. There absolutely are plans for a book. I've been talking with Carol Butler of Butler Books, and we hope to get because this is actually what would that be the 30th or 40th year anniversary of the first book because they did a book back in well, I guess 73 of his work. We're going to produce another book after this show. Right now, I'm kind of focusing on where do we go from here in terms of I want the people of the city of Louisville to be able to see these cartoons. I mean, I want them to be available because I don't want them just to, you know, to go back into storage. And, you know, I don't want to just, you know, scatter them to the winds and sell them on the internet. I mean, it took a lot of effort to get all these, the best of the best, together for the people of Louisville. And now we have the Christ Christmas cartoon, and we have the original printing plate from the Christ Christmas cartoon, both of which were returned by people who my father had given them to. Uh-huh. And what's kind of neat about, because my dad was such a good guy, all these people are coming forward just returning all this stuff. I get calls all day long. Your dad gave me a cartoon. I'd like to return it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's just nice. I mean,
now what does happen, you know, in terms of the future? Like, just what you're saying, this is here until January 26th, mm-hmm. and then, you know, go back to your house. What's going to happen?
I mean, I don't want it to go back in a vault. I would like to find a permanent home for it. Where that's going to be right now, I can't say. But a lot's going to depend on. I need to keep this collection together. I would like to see it stay at its full 150, you know, strength. Although that's pretty large for a museum collection, depending on where it lands. You can rotate these things through, but
are there like more? I mean, this is your collection, but I guess there's more out there.
This is pretty much it. This is a lot of cartoons. Mm-hmm. And what makes these cartoons special is, to be honest with you, I'm, you know, the very few things that you know, I'm an expert on, but the one thing I am an expert on is Dad's work. I mean, I grew up in the courier, sitting in his lap. You know, I'm an artist. I know how these things were put together, and these are the best of the best. I mean, there's a few other cartoons out there that I would want. Obviously, we have no idea where those particular cartoons are, like the July 4th cartoon, which is actually my personal favorite, and very much in a way that's almost like a self-portrait in a way, even though it's mm-hmm. Jefferson. That if you look at that cartoon and you see what he's written in there, you see by the way he was able to bring Jefferson's face out of the Declaration of Independence is by writing little things in there, and it says like, "God bless the College of our fathers, you know, all hail the redheaded Virginians," and everything. My father was very much a student of Jeffersonian democracy and, you know, the founding fathers and all that sort of thing. He kind of saw it as his job to, you know, hold the politicians accountable for the ideals of this country. At least that's what he saw himself doing.
Oh, well, it is really an amazing piece of work. And I'll just, before we go, mention there's a few other things in the exhibit besides just the pieces of art. There's a Christmas cards collection that he did, and apparently I understand he had a penchant for $2 bills, paying people with $2 bills, right?
Yeah, he used $2 bills. I mean, they were perfectly legal tender, but nobody used them, and he would initial them, and they would actually come back to him in circulation, and everybody would know when Dad had been there and how much money he'd spent, and he got great service, and he just really, he just loved it. You know, he thought it was fun. But yeah, they've got all sorts of stuff. They got some of his pictures of the Kennedys up here, I think.
And I see his desk. That must be that's a real standout piece, I guess.
Actually, the desk belongs to the Kentucky History Museum. Mm-hmm. I gave that to them when they did their first show. I very much wanted to keep this drawing board because it's got a shadow box built into it, which makes it unique. He had this handmade by the carpenter at the Courier. My drawing board, I have to use a separate shadow box, so I really wanted this, but I thought it kind of belongs.
All right. Well, Smith Haney, it's been a pleasure seeing this exhibit and seeing your father's work and spending a little time with you. And thanks for being
absolutely,
on the show
man.
With us. Hopefully everybody will come up and see it.
Yeah. It's a gas. It's a walk down memory lane, you know. If you grew up with these cartoons, you'll remember where you were. And it's just
yeah,
it's
I
just
sure
a
did.
Gas,
it's really an amazing exhibit. Thank you very much for sharing.
Come on down. Thanks.
That'll do it for another edition of the Rusty Satellite Show. Thanks again to Passport Health Plan for sponsoring the show. The other event on Main Street last week was at the Slugger Museum, where it was just a wonderful event. A couple hundred people were there, and Cal Ripken Jr., one of my idols, heroes, who happens to have been born 4 days before me in 1960, was receiving an award, and you talk about a class act. Mr. Ripken is just that. He's spending his post-playing career promoting a foundation that creates playgrounds for kids and ballparks. He's just worthy of all the praise that comes his way. So really fortunate to get to meet Cal Ripken Jr. and see the Slugger Museum. They had that auction last week. Somebody paid like $500,000 for a Bill Mazeroski jersey. Mazeroski was there too, and if you don't know that name, I'm not surprised. But in 1960, the year I was born, he hit a big home run to help the Pirates beat the Yankees in the World Series. And it's amazing how much memorabilia related to Mazeroski was available at that auction last week. It was really quite an event to attend, and one of the great things about living in this great city of Louisville, Kentucky.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, @RickyRedding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.
What the hell?